A few short weeks ago, it was all change at the City of York Council. The local elections took place in May, and there was a change in administration from the previous Lib Dem-controlled council to a new Labour-controlled administration. And we're delighted that in the studio at Y01 with us today, as well as Wayne Chadwick, is much more importantly, is Claire Douglas, Absolutely. Who is now the leader of the City of York Council. Claire, welcome to Y01 Radio.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for such a kind introduction and inviting me today. It's great to be here.
It was great to see you. Thank you for coming as well to our open event that we did a couple of weeks ago. Fantastic facilities we've got here, but this is the first time that you've actually been in the studio being interviewed with us. So again, thanks for coming down. We want to touch on a few things. You've been the leader of the council now for what, 2.5 weeks, something like that?
Yes.
Maybe a little longer than that.
Yeah.
Does it feel as though you're settling into it now, or does it still feel quite daunting at the moment?
I don't think daunting's the right word, really. You know, this transition has been a long time in the making. And I've been a councillor for 4 years now and in some form of leadership for 2 years, just over that at this point. And so it's just really a progression. So I came into the role as leader of the council having a really good understanding of the big issues that are affecting our city and what the residents want for York, and also businesses, civic society, voluntary sector, you name it. I've spoken to all of them. No, daunting isn't the right word, but it is a big job, and I'm under no illusion there is an awful lot of work to be done. So we're just excited to get on with it, to be honest.
And how have you found it so far?
Absolutely fantastic. The reception from the city has been absolutely amazing, and there's an awful lot of goodwill out there, a real sense of ready for change and doing things differently, and we absolutely want to do that. So the council officers have been tremendously supportive in getting started on trying to deliver on our pledges that we made to the city, getting some of the big issues sorted out that we all know we've got, like reversing the blue badge ban, and I couldn't ask for more.
So one of the things that, I don't know, maybe the general public don't always recognise here, of course, is that there are two parts to a council. So there are the elected councillors, such as yourself. Those are the people that people vote for at the elections. And then there are the council officers. They're the ones who stay there all the time. In effect, they're the local version of the civil servants that serve mm-hmm. central government, yeah. aren't they? So they have to basically help to deliver the policies that you put in place, Andy. So how's that process actually work when you move from one administration to another?
There's an awful lot of conversations in the early stages. We've given them our manifesto, our list of policies and our pledges. And then also I'm busy, and in fact all of our executive members are busy, talking to council officers about what our priorities are for the council and what we would like to see change and how we'd like to see it done. We don't get involved in the day-to-day delivery of that, but it is about the overarching principles and policy drive. And it's going really well. They're very open, very helpful. I couldn't ask for better.
So one of the first things that you need to do when you come into a situation like that, of course, is to bring together the team of people who are going to deliver the policies that you've promised in the pledges on the run-up to the election. So was that something that you'd kind of planned before the election? You knew who was going to be the people in the lead positions? Have they just kind of transitioned over from a shadow council, if you like, to the main one? What was the process to get your team in place after the election?
Yeah, and for us, and when I say us, that's me and Councillor Pete Kilbane. We've been working as a team with me as leader in opposition and him deputy leader for the previous year, that, you know, it's a 2-year project. None of this happens by accident. And we spent a long time both working with councillors in their shadow roles. So examples of that are Councillor Bob Webb, who's got responsibility for children, young people and education, and Michael Pavlovic, who's has responsibility for housing and communities. And then Katie Lomas is part of our team as well, and she was chair of Audit and Governance Committee previously. Then me and Pete are on the executive, obviously. And then we have some new people as well, some new councillors who are just really absolutely gifted experts in their field and just bring a totally new dynamic as well. So it's a great combination of people, tried and tested people, but with some new energy too.
Now, when we met at the election count a couple of weeks ago, literally just after the kind of final results had been declared, and you were there really as the leader of the council elect, if you like, I asked you what your priorities were going to be coming into office, and the first thing that you came up with on that was very definitely, very clearly, from your point of view, to reverse the blue badge decision from the previous administration. Is that still your number one priority?
Yes, it is. We've started those conversations. The officers, again, have been very helpful. They've given us a few different options of how we can do that. So there's conversations to be had with the disabled community, but also the security services, so police and MI5, around making sure we do it correctly. But yeah, we've got the options, they're doable, and we hope to have that done within 100 days of us taking power. So yeah, it's looking very optimistic.
Claire, when did you want to come in on that stage?
Yeah, sorry. Claire, was that a difficult decision, the blue badge, because of what's related to making that decision? You mean, you just said you've had to talk to MI5, you've had to conclude things, there'll probably be things you can't even talk about, but you've had to, on balance, decide that it is the best thing to do and forgo security to a certain extent.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I've said this numerous times to different people. As an elected politician, you are expected to make difficult decisions, and you're provided with all of the information that's required to make that decision. And then we all, between us, have to assess where the level of risk is appropriate for the benefit. So we have a situation with the blue badge ban where disabled people haven't been able to access the city centre for 3 years now. And we also know that we need to keep our city centre safe from terrorism threat, don't we? And there is a compromise position to be found within that. And it is my job to make sure and make a decision where that point is. So, and so I'm willing to accept that risk.
So that compromise decision hasn't quite been made yet. You're still in dialogue. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Some of the infrastructure work had already started to take place, hadn't it? So is some of that now going to be wasted, or is this kind of going to be hopefully linked into whatever kind of compromise situation you come up with?
Yeah, absolutely. It will be linked into the situation and the compromise solution. Because at the end of the day, you know, we have a busy, vibrant city centre, don't we? And a good example of that is at Christmas with the Christmas market. And we have to keep everybody safe then. So there may be additional measures needed at that point in time, but it doesn't mean that we need them 365 days of the year.
Because the barriers that are put in place at Christmas, they're quite substantial. Mm. They're a little bit unsightly, but I think everybody knows the reason why they're there. You know, there are things that have happened in the past. One of the German markets had a terrorist attack, and that was one of the reasons why particularly Christmas markets were kind of set up as being something that needed to be looked at from a security point of view. So you're still mindful of that as you go forward with this, that for certain events that take place that attract more than the normal number of people into the town, that you'll still need to have something to mitigate against that?
Yes, absolutely. And that's when we call on the experts, the police and MI5, to tell us what those situations are.
Let's move on to one of your other pledges. This is the one about free school meals for all primary school children. That's a big ask and an expensive ask.
Yes, yeah, it's not insubstantial, but our aim on that one was really to have an immediate impact on the pockets of our residents. We all know the cost of living crisis is hitting everybody and more people all of the time. And we think that as a city, we should be doing something about that. And so it will be a citywide initiative. It won't just be the council funding all of it. We are going to be a financial contributor, a significant financial contributor. But at the same time, we're working with organisations around the city, our large employers, our large organisations who we know throughout the city that want to come together to really do something of importance and benefit for everybody.
I mean, I know it's going to be early days with that yet, but to put that forward as a pledge before the election, then presumably you must have had some discussions yes. with some of these potential partners beforehand.
Mm.
Is there an appetite out there, if you pardon the pun, for providing that funding? Because the council's not going to be able to afford that on its own, is it?
No, that we're not. And but yes, there is. And I think we all know that our city has a real history of social justice and philanthropy, don't we? We're very, very fortunate in that way. And we still have some very active people and organisations in our city. And to be honest, across the board with our manifesto pledges, the goodwill and the willingness to get out there and do things that will benefit the people of York has just, it's across our city, and we're really taking advantage of that for a real benefit. You know, there are educational outcomes that are fantastic, long-term health improvements, but also it does help the pockets of hard-pushed people.
Would the families be means-tested at all? Is that something that you've thought about?
We're not going to do means testing, but what we are going to do is start the programme through the primary schools that sit in the most disadvantaged parts of our city, so we can measure that quite easily. We've got tons of data about where those are. And the idea around free school meals is a universal offer to take away the stigma that can be attached to it. We often hear about children feeling that they're singled out when they bring out their voucher or whatever system exists in
That's
school, and we want
there,
to take
it?
That away. Yes.
That's always been there. I can remember that from when I was at school, and that was a long time ago, was that that there was a definite distinction between the people who were queuing up to pay for the school meals and the people
which
who
is not
got
ideal
the freedoms,
for the, for the
ideal.
Child, is
no,
it?
No, not at all. No,
no,
no not at all.
No.
Not at all.
No.
I don't want this to appear as though we're going through a list of every single one of the pledges that you made before the election, but there are some interesting ones in there to talk about. One of the other things is about affordable housing, and particularly on council land. How much council land is there available in York to be able to do some of that kind of thing?
Yeah, we have a number of sites that are earmarked for housing at this point in time. And some that we hoped would be moving ahead by now, but aren't. So, you know, there's actually quite a lot of council-owned land. And to the extent that we believe that if we're not delivering as a local authority affordable housing and housing for key workers on that land, then I don't know who's going to do it. Because, you know, we have the ability to work differently. We're not profit-driven. It means that we can start to tackle the housing list that exists in York. At the moment, there are 1,100 households sitting, waiting for housing, and those are people desperately in need. Not everybody who needs housing is on the housing list. And we just think that as a local authority, we need to really start making an impact on that, because in the meantime, rents are going up, house prices appear to have arrested a bit in York at this point in time, but I don't think we will think that that is forever. And we just need to do what we can.
Do you think that you're going to have to encroach onto the green belt? Do you think that's going to be an absolute necessary?
Well, within the local plan that is hopefully going to be approved in the next couple of months, there are designated housing sites that are sits in the green belt at the moment, but they're designated housing sites within the local plan, and that's what we'll be building on, and that's what developers will be building on. We have no plans to go any further into the green belt than is already stipulated within the local plan.
Another obvious question with that one, of course, is that where does the money come from to build the housing? And how quickly could that potentially start? Building a house doesn't happen overnight, does it? And you've got to set out the stall as to what you're going to do going forward, obviously. But how quickly do you think, given the fact that you've just said that there's a massive need already within York, how quickly do you think you could start to deliver on that side of the proposal.
In order to deliver at pace and at scale, we need to work with others. And you'll hear me say this a lot about a lot of what we want to do. Local authorities, if you're serious about sorting out some of the endemic problems that sit within your boundaries, you have to think more creatively about how you deliver. And so housing's no different on that. And we've been talking to housing association partners across the city and region for 2 years now. No surprise, I told you earlier, our project's 2 years long. And it's about delivering differently with them as partners. We can't do it all on our own. If we had to, as a local authority, raise all the funds ourselves, it would be very difficult. Mm. But they have access to funds, but they don't have land. So we can work together and deliver. And actually, I was talking to a Labour council leader colleague in Hastings recently. He's been leader of his council for a year now. He's working in a similar way. And they are starting to deliver on the 500 houses that they've pledged to build in Hastings within a year. We're absolutely committed to getting this going as quickly as we can.
Do you have a number in mind for this at the moment, or is that just a case of trying to identify what space might be available and who your partners are?
Yeah, we don't have a number because what we need to do is take the allocated council land and have a look at what can be delivered on that. So as soon as I know, I'll pass it over to you.
Do you have a rough figure in mind? I mean, as to...
No, I talking, don't. I wouldn't like to say.
So we're not talking dozens, are we talking hundreds?
Yeah, hundreds.
Hundreds, yeah. For sure. There's one other thing from the pledges that I want to touch on, because I'm quite interested in this as a concept, which is your neighbourhood caretakers idea. Is this the same as the kind of stuff that the Business Improvement District do in the city centre, where it's bringing in extra resource to make sure the city centre is clean? Is this moving that out into the stick, so to speak?
The York bid, yeah, they've brought in new, different people. We won't be bringing in new and different people. We've already got a team of folks, staff that work on doing these jobs within the council. We may need to retrain some of them or provide some apprenticeships for young people. But essentially what we want to do is to put small teams into neighbourhoods so that they do the base street services that we all know are so important to us in a really effective way that responds to what residents want. At the moment, for example, I'll use a live situation. I think everybody is aware that the council's approach to mowing verges in the past month has been delayed. And so we've got grass everywhere in some areas. And those people, those neighbourhood caretakers, would be able to go around and at least tidy up after that process. The other one that hasn't been working very well is dealing with weeds in communities. We've had a big contract, external contract, that means that basically a company comes in and they do the same thing pretty much in every area. And we think that we need to be far more responsive to that. Some areas don't want their weed sprayed as regularly or don't want it sprayed at all. And if we put in neighbourhood caretakers, then they can speak to their residents, or residents associations, community groups can tell them what they want and they can respond. So we think everybody wins.
So this is a redistribution of existing resources then, rather than bringing in additional resource on top of
that. Yeah, at this point in time.
Do most of the kind of cleansing, street cleaning services that the council provides at the moment, are they done in-house, or are they contracted out to external organisations at the moment?
It's a bit of a mix and match. So we have our own staff. The waste is collected by CYC staff. But then, as I said to you, weed eradication is dealt with by external contract, and there are others as well. So we just think that it all needs a bit of a rethink.
Is this going to be more about flexibility then? Because when you've got external companies providing services, they're going to provide the service that you've contracted them to provide, not necessarily whatever you think might need doing on that day of the week. So is this about the people who you do have control over making them more flexible about how they react to what's needed?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's something that residents have been telling us that they want to see. You know, we take great pride in our streets, don't we? And I think that many people have felt like over the past years, the cities look a bit unkempt in places, not everywhere, but in places. And we think that this is a good approach to try and remedy some of that.
Is there a, what's your thoughts? Is there a balance to be struck in terms of, I suppose, for want of a better way of putting it, green issues? I know there's a kind of a school of thought out there, isn't at the moment, that actually grass verges, you should just leave them. Don't cut the grass, just leave them to go back to nature, and that way you get a more diverse kind of ecosystem, for want of a better way of putting it. How do you balance those two things up?
Yeah, it's not easy, is it?
Nothing's ever easy.
Different people have different views on whether they want their grass verges cut or not. But we do have to consider, of course, we have to consider biodiversity. And even if you let things grow, that it still needs some management. So it's not a just a leave it and forget about
not
it
like,
situation.
Not like Dave's back garden.
Yeah.
I can use the idea of it being a green thing to not cut the grass.
Exactly.
Yeah. That,
you know. Going back to cleaning of streets, Claire, I mean, which is a huge issue, and the city centre, where does the bid come into the synergy with the council?
Yeah, well, the bid takes a levy from all of the city centre businesses, and you may be a bid levy payer yourselves. And they respond to what their businesses are telling them that they want more of. But the base services are provided by the council.
Yes, so the council do all the work, and then they'll go and do extras because, obviously, on Saturdays and Friday nights, all sorts of things happen.
Yes,
exactly. And they may have to do some attention to detail, let's just say.
Yeah. But we do think that the city centre needs a whole lot more focus, because it's looking really quite grubby, isn't it? And we just think that everything needs a bit more loving care and attention. And people have been telling us this for some time, so we just want to be a bit more listening and responsive to that. So, you know, neighbourhood caretakers will be a part of that too.
Including city centre?
Yeah, well, it's Guildhall Ward. Yeah. That's a community in itself. There are people that live in the city centre, aren't there?
Yes, of course, yeah.
You've got a majority of one on the council. Is that going to make life difficult for you, potentially, do you think?
You know, politics isn't an easy place to be any situation, to be honest.
Why did you do it in the first place? Well, come on, we'll come on to that.
I think we know that on a national basis it's in turmoil, isn't it? So.
But I have to say that this doesn't worry me, just having a majority of one, because York is, on local authority levels, it is a tight political environment. And it means that we're all very focused on trying to make the best decisions that we can all of the time. And I don't find that threatening at all. It does mean that all of our councillors have to be present all the time. But we do have good relations with other councillors from other parties in the chamber as well, who have been supportive of us, and I hope to maintain those relationships. So I think it's actually pretty good politics. It means that the people should, in principle, get the best out of their city as they possibly can, and we're absolutely determined to do that.
And it's part of this trying to work with the other parties as well, including the ones that you were probably quite fiercely opposing at the elections themselves, that you've got to kind of bring them round to your way of thinking, and to convince them that the policies that you're putting in place are ones that's worthy of their support.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't need to worry too much about the one person majority.
No, absolutely. And my principle and guide is always to do the right thing for the right reason. And I think very carefully about that. I think my responsibility as a councillor to listen to our residents, take what they say seriously and act on it, is really important. And so I hope by showing that we're doing that, then we convince the other parties as well that what we're proposing to do are the right things. If at any point I have severe opposition to anything that we're doing because we haven't listened, we haven't taken into account people's views, or we've just stuck our heels in totally unnecessarily, I hope that the public will tell us. And that's what the voting, the electoral, the democratic process is all about, isn't it?
So when we went to the well, Wayne and I actually attended the first council meeting of the new council. That's all the pomp and circumstance, really, isn't it? That's the yes. election of the Lord Mayor and the election of yourself as the leader of the council as well. So have you had any council meetings already since then? When's the first proper one where you're going to be actually talking policies due? Is that in the near future?
Yes, it's on Thursday. That's executive. So those will be the first papers going through the new executive that will then go to full council, which is in July. I think it's the 20th of July.
Let's move away from that side of it a little bit and let's find out a little bit more about you as a person, Claire, and just tell us a little bit about how you got to be where you are now as the leader of the City of York Council. Is politics something that you've always been interested in, or is it something that's come to you as your career's progressed?
I've always been interested in politics as an observer and as a person who likes to talk about, you know, what's going on in our world and paying attention to that. But I've not always been a politician by any means at all. I came to it about how long ago now? 7 years ago, so 2016. I finally got to the point where I said to myself, Claire, you can't sit on the sidelines anymore and keep moaning. If you're going to moan, get out there and do something about it. So that's what I did. And previous to that, I'd been running my own business. I've been a teacher in the past. I've run charities as well. So I've got quite a breadth of experience of different sectors. And I just came to a point where people had been encouraging me to get active. I joined the Labour Party just as a member, just out of interest to go along. And then once people started to get to know me then they said to me, have you considered being a councillor before? And I said, of course I haven't. And that's it, really. And so it happened quite quickly from that point. I became a councillor in 2019. And I was on the shadow executive straight away with responsibility for economy and city development because of my business background. And then I became deputy leader in 2021 and leader in 2022.
Do you consider that possibly you're in your honeymoon period at the moment? I mean, it tends to happen. They call it the first 100 days often, doesn't it? There's a bit of a honeymoon period. Everybody's pleased to see you. You've got lots of wonderful ideas. Are you absolutely aware, or do you feel that, you know, moving forward, well, in a few months' time, then things will start to become more difficult, as happens with all administrations?
Yeah, I'm under no illusion that everybody's very optimistic about what the future will bring, and that they were really ready for change, and we are that change. But I am quite determined that we're going to do our very best to make the right decisions, the right reasons, and keep on the right path with that. And I'm sure there will be people who don't agree with us all the time. That's just natural, isn't it? So honeymoon period now, quite likely, but I hope to keep it positive, optimistic, and producing for the city. That's my absolute aim.
You won't mind me saying this, I'm sure, but that's not a Yorkshire accent, is it, that I'm hearing? So,
isn't it? Where, I thought it was.
It's not Lancashire, is it?
So where were your roots?
Luton.
Yes.
Yeah. How did you get it? I didn't know you got Luton connections as well.
No, I haven't. But I just can pick up the accent. You see.
I told you previously, did I?
That's your research. That is.
Yeah. I grew up in Luton in Bedfordshire, and then I left there when I went to university. I went to Manchester to do a physics degree, and had a great time there. And I've lived in various places. And then my husband, who's an academic, he had the opportunity to go and work in the US in California. So we went there for 4.5 years. And then when he got his first permanent job at 35, wow. Then we moved to York. He got a job at the University of York. And so that was 19 years ago now.
Do you still keep the Luton connections? I mean, it's been a good year if you're a football fan, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I still have some family who live in Luton and around. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's where I was until I was 18. So you never lose that, do you? Mm-hmm.
Now, Wayne talked about honeymoon periods and all that kind of stuff, and things are just going to get busier and busier for you as they go along. But you need to have a little bit of downtime, don't you? So what does Claire like to do when she's not the leader of the City of York Council?
Oh, dear. Well, at the moment, there isn't much of that downtime. No. And to be honest, I have to book time to go away somewhere to find that, and have done for some period of time, but that's okay. And in fact, at the weekend, I was really fortunate. I was able to go to a concert, went to see the Chapter House Choir at St Olive's on Marygate. So I like to do that. I like to go and see music of all different types. In fact, I like to get out and go walking. I love the countryside and nature. And the peace and quiet that brings. But then I always really enjoy friends and getting together. And I did some of that at the weekend as well.
You see, I suppose one of the problems is that we've got a beautiful city in York, which is very popular and there's lots to see. But if you walk around York City Centre on a weekend trying to have a bit of downtime, you keep getting stopped by people. And then you end up, you're back into councillor mode before you know it.
Yeah, but it's very positive. You know, I know a lot of people around the city, and a lot of them I do consider to be friends on some level. So it's nice conversations, you know, and I'm always happy to see people or give them a wave, whatever it is.
You can't turn off from it altogether, can you, anyway, when you're out there? That just goes with the territory, doesn't it? You wouldn't be a councillor if you didn't want to get stopped in the street, would you?
Yeah, well, I don't think I thought about that when I was, you know, first started being a councillor. But I really do enjoy seeing people, and I always see people that I know around and about, and I'm always happy to do that. So, no, that's not a hardship for me. And I really love getting out and about, whether it's with my councillor or leader hats on or not. So I couldn't be happier when people wave or say hello. It's all we chat. It's absolutely fine.
Are you a foodie? Do you like your food?
I do. I have less time for thinking about things like that now.
I thought you were going to say I've got less time for eating.
Well, that does seem to be the case often as well. But I don't have as much time for thinking about it. But I'm quite happy to go to a nice restaurant. I'm not super keen on really formal situations. I'd rather be somewhere that's relaxed. My husband and I went to Spark last night, for example. We're quite happy to sit outside and just have a burger and a beer. But then we like to go for celebratory dinners as well. I think a bit like everybody, you know, if it's a special occasion.
Claire, if there was, just to kind of wrap things up, if you just had a couple of minutes of your own time to give a message to Y1 Radio's listeners about what's coming up, what would that message be?
I'd like to thank everybody for putting their trust in their Labour councillors in their communities at the last local election, and that we do understand that there is a lot of work to be done in the city, and there's a lot of people feeling quite disenfranchised from the council at the moment. So we're going to be working really hard on that. But I think it's very optimistic, and our city is absolutely fantastic, and we've got a lot of opportunity coming our way. So we just want to take advantage of that and the great people that live here and do the absolute best we can by them.
Claire, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come and talk to us today. I'm absolutely certain that this will not be the last time that we speak, and hopefully you'll be very happy to come in on a regular basis and update us on progress on some of the things that we've spoken about today.
Absolutely, I couldn't be happier.
And thank you from me.
Thank you.